pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Basketball game of the year. Holly Rowe will join us in just a few minutes. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to a writer about the significance socially and on the court of what this game represents. So let's check in with Jack, who is in Virginia. Hello, Jack. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Last time I called you was 7 years ago when I told you it was time for Holly Warlick to go.
I do remember
that.
I'd
like to talk about the Kelly Harper situation just a minute. I think Kelly got good recruits in, but she did not get the elite recruits. The only elite recruit I can think she got was a transfer, the Jackson kid. A prime example is that that we need to look outside the Tennessee family and get a coach in there who has no affiliation with the UT program. And I think Kenny Brooks at Virginia Tech built that program. And what do you think?
Well, Jack, listen, I don't know what the mindset is, but there's a good chance you're right about where Tennessee ought to go after Kelly Harper. Hey, thank you very much. It's pretty amazing. Alabama's in the Final Four. Today, the biggest topic on the show has been Kelly Harper and where the Tennessee program goes next, which has been really the theme of the year in basketball, as we are just hours away, three to be exact, for the biggest basketball game of the year to date between Iowa and LSU. And Holly Rowe, who has been watching this from a very good seat, well, actually maybe a good position because she's standing most of the game, joining us. Holly, I'll spare how busy you are, because I know you are, because I've seen you 100 times today all over the world on television. But thank you for making time. And before we get to the social significance of what is at stake here tonight, let's talk about what happens on the court and how you anticipate this really exciting meeting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I think it's going to be an awesome game. You know, I think both teams have significant strengths that are very different. Caitlin Clark is someone who can score. You know, she's had a career high of 49 points this year. And she can go off at any moment. She can hit threes at any moment that just change the complexion of games. But she's got a really solid team around her. Kate Martin, who is a senior, a sixth-year senior, has a ton of experience. And actually, everybody on Iowa, for the most part, can hit threes. So if Iowa hits threes, that could be very challenging. But then you look at the LSU Tigers. Number one, Kim Mulkey is fiery. She gets the team to play that way. And Angel Reese is just phenomenal. I don't think we have paid enough attention all season long to what Angel Reese is doing on the basketball court. You know, she has something insane, like 26 straight double-doubles. She has been their leading scorer for most of the season. Angel Reese puts this team on her back and just wins. You know, I'm working on a piece right now that we're going to do in the game, hopefully, about what a winner she is. She won three championships in high school, two in volleyball, three in basketball, a national championship. All Angel Reese does is win. And with the emergence of Flaje Johnson, I just think they have a lot of really key scores that can make this interesting. So just so much good basketball. There's so many storylines. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, Holly, the one thing that gets lost a little bit to most people, not you, but is the game itself. Having covered the story for many years and having covered the game last year, just try to put it all into perspective for us, as I'm sure you've been asked to do and will be asked a few more times today.
Yeah, I think, you know, LSU is a team that is pretty much just trying to rebuild their program under Kim Mulkey. This is only the third year that Coach Kim Mulkey has been there, and they're trying to kind of rebuild and find their identity. This year, their identity is some key transfers. They really only have three players on this roster who played in last year's national championship game. So just wrap your mind around that. This isn't the same LSU team that took the floor in this matchup last year. It's a lot of new faces, but they're experienced. Anissa Morrow had a great career at DePaul. This is her first NCAA tournament. Haley Van Lith has played in the Final Four for Louisville, but she had a tough go of things against South Carolina in that matchup. So it's all new for LSU, but they continue to be big on this stage. They continue to show up in big moments. And I think that's a really cool storyline for the LSU Tigers.
Holly, there's a country song from about 40 years ago by Barbara Mandrell about being country before country was cool. You were an advocate and a proponent of this game before all of us suddenly embraced it like last night. But I'm curious what you make out of every single thing that has gone into this college basketball season for the women. And we have a guest on in a few minutes who said this morning on NPR that this is the biggest game of the year in basketball. Not to pit men versus women, but I really am curious what you are making out of this story that you are living and dying every day.
Yeah, number one, it's really cool. I think there's been a group of us who have been just beating the drum and pleading for people to pay attention to women's basketball for so long. And this moment feels really special and cool. Like, you all finally get to see what we've been seeing all these years. But some things have happened too. I think the emergence of social media that has allowed these players to be seen more, and the public gets to decide what they click on social media. And we've seen that there is an appetite and there is an interest for women's sports, not just basketball, but across the board, women's sports are booming. The public is having their say, but then we are seeing some generational talents. Lisa Bluder, the Iowa coach, she's done a phenomenal job, said something at Shoot Around today. She said, Caitlin Clark came along at the perfect moment. Someone of her scoring ability and kind of the flash and flair and flavor that she plays with, it was the perfect moment. And she said, I'd also include Angel Reese and Juju Watkins and some of these other great players in that. Is the ascension and the rise of the interest was there, but then the performance of these athletes has just elevated it. And they keep showing up. They keep performing. And I just think it's cool. One of the things I've been blown away by all year, all of these attention on Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, they have found a way to still perform in the biggest moments. You know, they don't have bad games. They don't have terrible games. You know, I think you can count on one hand the bad game that either one of them has had all year. And that they're able to perform under the scrutiny is incredible. And I want to read you this quote so I get it right. But today at Shoot Around, I talked with Caitlin Clark and she said, I think Angel Reese is great. I have a lot of empathy for what she's going through, the criticism that she receives. We are all celebrating the growth of women's basketball. And she's one of the few people in the world that can understand this microscope and how they kind of shared that no matter what they do, some people love it, some people hate it. And I think it's really special that these two women understand the moment that they are in. And Angel said today at practice, I thought this was really cute, Paul. She said, I will always remember this moment. Tonight is going to be one for the ages, no matter what happens, and I get to be in it. They understand how special and how cool this really is.
And Holly, what's even more remarkable are the two programs and the two coaches we're not even mentioning, but we'll get plenty of airtime this Friday night. I mean, only the two biggest programs since Pat Summitt retired, and I'm talking about UConn and South Carolina.
Yeah, I don't want to slight South Carolina at all, because what Don Staley has done there, this team is 36-0 with a brand new starting five. It really is remarkable what she and the Gamecocks have been able to do. And talking to Coach Staley, I think what's really special is she's had to kind of grow and evolve as a coach this year, because this team is loose. They call themselves loosely focused. And by that, she means like they have fun. They're talking to each other crazy, having fun. She's like, sometimes we just have to shut the door because we don't want to hear everything that's going on. But when the moment arrives that they have to lock in and be good, they have been so far. And Don said, I'm learning as a coach. I just have to let them be them. They are organically themselves. And she has done a phenomenal job with this group. And then, yeah, I think it's really weird that we haven't talked much about UConn all year, and that yet they have been performing at a high level. Paige Beckers has some of the best numbers in the NCAA tournament out of any player. Gino is always Gino. And, you know, UConn plays tonight against USC. Juju Watkins, if you haven't tuned in to watch her, she is must-watch basketball. And so we just have – how cool is it that we have too many storylines that we can even get to, because there's just so much good stuff happening in women's basketball.
We will let you get ready. It's hours away, and I know you're not there yet, so you better get moving. Thanks so much.
Well,
Holly Rowe joining us just hours before the game of the year for now. We'll take a short break. We have much more to do here on this very busy Monday afternoon. We'll recap everything, your phone calls, and more guests right around the corner.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. A couple of minutes ago, we played some post-game sound of Nate Oates in Los Angeles Saturday night talking about the influences that he's had. He mentioned a couple of names. He talked about Nick Saban, obviously, who won 6 national championships at Alabama. He also mentioned Sarah Patterson, who also won 6 national championships at Alabama in women's gymnastics. And we are delighted to say hello to Sarah. Sarah, good afternoon. I know Tuscaloosa must be buzzing. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Just balancing the game tonight with Alabama and everything else that's going on.
Well, I'm so proud of all our sports, but to see our men's basketball team just leap to this level has been amazing. And I had the privilege when Greg was hiring him. We were hosting a party or a part of a party at the Burns House for Girls and Boys Club that Mal Moore had originally started, and Greg and Regina continued. And we kept coming up with a date, and then Greg couldn't do it. And we said, no, if Greg's not there, it's okay. Let's just go ahead and get it over with and do it. And that night at the end of the event, in walks Greg with Nate and his family as their first time into Tuscaloosa. So I was standing at the front door of Greg's house when Nate walked in and got to meet everybody.
Oh, how cool.
And, you know, it was really cool, and he's just been amazing ever since then. And I went out to meet the team yesterday when they came back, and, you know, just to hug the staff and, you know, tell them how proud I am of them and to enjoy this moment. You know, you get to do this a lot, and he will get to do this a lot. But the first time you're at that championship setting in the Final Four, the Final Eight, whatever it is in your sport, it's just a moment to remember. And, you know, people have talked a lot about Greg Byrne, and I want to say, I've worked for maybe 10 or 11 athletic directors. One was interim and, you know, for a short time. And I worked for a lot of great men, but I can tell you, I've never really been around an AD that was quite like Greg Byrne. And I think you were right in saying he's the finest AD in the country right now. I look at the way he does things, and I see how he handles it, and he's hired so many great coaches. Everybody talks about Nate and Kalen DeBoer, but, you know, we have a great baseball coach. We have a wonderful volleyball coach, Rashinda Reed, and Ashley Priest-Johnson that was hired in to be our gymnastics coach. And those two women were even pregnant when Greg hired them, and that didn't matter to him. And that says a lot of where we've come. And then as we're looking at the Iowa-LSU game tonight and the growth of women's sports, you know, I see Holly out there all the time. Holly's been at a lot of events I've been to, and, you know, she does an amazing job. But now to see women's sports all over the SEC in gymnastics, they all sell out. The crowds for women's basketball, softball, women's volleyball, 60,000 people in Nebraska's football stadium. I mean, those moments, it takes me back to, it was 1997 when it was Georgia and Alabama gymnastics, and we sold out the Coliseum for the first time. And that was 1997, 15,020 people. And now I look at what women's sports is doing, and it really just warms my heart and makes me proud.
You know, it's funny, Sarah, I was walking around our office on, I think it was Friday, you know, we have all these TVs with all the different networks on, and they showed that on the SEC network. They were doing the documentary on you and Suzanne Yakowin, and it was really funny to see that. I mean, I've seen it many times, but I have not seen it in a while.
Well, it's interesting because as I go around town here, people, you know, enjoy those things so much, and everybody kept coming up. I didn't know it was on again. And they were like, oh, we watched you on TV. And, you know, but when you take that back, that was 1997. And now look where we are and look at all the women's sports. You know, Pat Summitt, she's the one that got me to put people in the stands, because she told me down at the SEC meetings, she said, Sarah, if you're not willing to market and promote as much as you coach and recruit, you will compete in front of no one. And I took those words and used them. And, you know, but now we have wonderful marketing companies. We have so many people that work for our athletic departments. But back in the day, we had to do it on our own. And I just, it probably has been the biggest blessing of my career to see women's sports just flourish in this time.
And Sarah, as great a coach as you were, and you were one of the epic coaches of your sports history, you were equal to that when it came to marketing.
Well, I learned from the best, Paul, that's for sure.
Because I was often at the other end of that phone call.
Yes, you were. And, you know, I mean, I can't remember back in the day, but someone said, well, why did you do that? Why did you spend 20 minutes online? I was like, because I got 5 minutes of free publicity, and we don't have that in our budget right now. So, yeah, you helped, and you have always been a huge supporter of women's sports, and I thank you for that. But it's amazing, and you know, I'm an SEC rooter. I always root for SEC teams, but I'm excited to see what Caitlin Clark does tonight.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think it's you know, I mean, of all the pre-hype, and there's been plenty of controversy about that. It is going to find what happens on the court will matter the most. Sarah, thank you. I can't wait to see you soon. Sarah Patterson, just a absolutely legendary coach. Thank you for checking in with us, Sarah.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
You bet. Great to hear from you. How about Sarge in Lexington, Kentucky? Hello, Sarge.
Hey, Paul. Just calling from the football school up here.
Yes.
Football, we're going to have, yeah. Paul, I'm thinking 3, maybe 4 losses this year. Ole Miss, Georgia, Tennessee, maybe Texas. And from my point of view, Paul, I'm good with that. But what I called to talk about, I want to talk about basketball, and I want to divert the attention from Cal. Yourself and others, callers, guests, have dissected Cal and his issues enough. I want to shine light on what I see as three problems or glaring errors by Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director. Now, I have respect for Mitch. He's elevated every single program in UK athletics, and he is nationally recognized as one of the finest athletic directors. But he's made three mistakes of recent. Number one, he's been reluctant to embrace NIL. And on your program, he had the gall to say, well, Paul, you know, some players like to get paid, but other players, it doesn't matter so much. Who on earth believes that? Number two, he has been slow to embrace booze. We were one of the last schools in the SEC to allow beer sales, and we still don't allow wine or liquor. I work in the booze business, and I can tell you the foregone revenue from wine and liquor could have funded at least one-third of Cal's buyout. And number three, what we're watching here is really the outcome of unintended consequences. A lifetime contract, which was given to him in 2019, does not give him things to reach for. It doesn't give him things to have to continue to prove. And I'm okay with Cal. I hate it when he runs to New Jersey and tells us he loves the state. But by and large, if he went to Louisville and took that team to an Elite Eight, it would drive us crazy. And I just think we need to have a little bit more discussion around some of these topics that I'm trying to bring light to. What do you think, Paul?
Well, listen, Mitch Barnhart is a traditionalist, and I've had many conversations with him, and you walk away going, I really admire that man for what he believes in and his convictions. Unfortunately, though, it doesn't help you keep up, and whether you like it or not, today's college sports world is dramatically different than it used to be. Sarge, thank you. We'll head to the break. A different perspective of what tonight means, a comparison between the women's Final Four and the men's, the significance of it in many different ways. We'll talk to one of the nation's leading opinionists on that subject and more right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Our next guest has covered everything from the rise of President Obama to the importance of hip-hop in the White House to the NBA to college sports to just mundane subjects like that. He is not only a best-selling author and a filmmaker, he's a senior writer at Anscape. And we are delighted to say hello to Jesse Washington again. Jesse, great to see you. Congratulations. I just read that you are going to continue doing this for a few more years at ESPN.
Be here.
Let's talk about this utterly bizarre story tonight, and I'm not going to give anything away because I know how you feel about it, but it just seems like so many forces are colliding on an Elite Eight game up in New York, and I mean, for a writer, for a filmmaker, for anyone, I mean, this is one of the most fascinating moments we've seen in a long time. Take it away.
Absolutely. I think this is the Final Four. We're not even to the Final Four, but these games tonight, man, they're amazing. Obviously, the headline is Iowa and Caitlin Clark versus LSU. And, you know, yes, it is LSU and Angel Reese, but it also feels like it's Kim Mulkey versus the world right now. If anyone has not read Kent Babb's profile of Kim Mulkey in the Washington Post, I encourage you to do so. It's a good and nuanced portrait of why she's such a winner. And, you know, there was a line somebody said, it's not original thinking, but if you like Mulkey before the article, you'll really like her now. And if you didn't like Mulkey before the article, you'll know why you don't like her. So there's just, you know, so many personalities and storylines. It's the defending champs, you know, it's a matchup of last year's game. And then there's the elephant in the room, which is the racial component and the stars of each team. One is Caitlin Clark is white, Angel Reese is black. So you mix that in and you got a great matchup.
You know, with all the buildup, and I can't remember a piece that received as much attention to Kent's piece as what Kim did by saying she had hired the best defamation firm in the country. By the way, I wish she'd let me know that. I'm looking for one of those. And it turned out that the most controversial subject of the day came completely across the country in the LA Times. And not to drag you into that, but Kim Mulkey had a pretty good day by being viciously attacked in her program by a columnist out there. Put that into perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do drag me into it. And look, man, journalists have a tough job. And we are not high on the public favorability ratings right now. And so you have two juxtapositions here of pieces of journalism coast to coast, right? The Washington Post piece, which Kim Mulkey tried to say was a hit job, was actually a very thorough and nuanced exploration of a public figure. I've been in this position. What Kent Babb did was call Kim Mulkey's dad, who she hasn't spoken to in 37 years, Kim Mulkey's sister, who hasn't spoken to her in 4 or 5 years, and on and on. And so when you do that as a journalist, people don't like that. So she attacked that piece, and that was when Kent was just doing a good job. On the other hand, you got the LA Times, and you know, maybe this happened because my brother Kevin Merritt is no longer the editor-in-chief, but I thought that was not a great look for the columnist, because he said some things about the team. Among them, he called LSU the dirty debutantes. And, you know, we always have to keep in mind that even though they're well paid, these are still college students, you know, and even though some of them, Angel Reese is a millionaire, but you can't call college students and young women dirty in any context, in my opinion. And there was a definite, you know, undertone of perhaps unconscious bias in that piece. Haley Van Lith, the white point guard on that team, talked about it being racist. So I think it's fair to say that that is a topic. So in that case, I think that Kim Mulkey was right, and that piece was unfair and uncalled for towards her team.
And speaking of your friend who isn't no longer the editor, I don't know if they have an editor based on what we both saw afterwards. we've both been there. I no longer write for a living, but we lived in fear of those editors. You deal with it a lot. And the idea of after the fact to acknowledge what it was, I mean, did someone see that article?
I don't know what happened. I think that there, you know, the LA Times has been decimated by layoffs, and our whole industry, you know, has been really cut almost to the bone in terms of taking away years of expertise and knowledge. Doing good journalism is hard. It requires experience, it requires tact, it requires time. And when you don't have the man and woman power that you need to do that, things slip through the cracks. And so, you know, you congratulated me earlier on signing a new contract to stay with ESPN's Anscape for another couple of years. And I'm deeply grateful. I also have some survivor's remorse because so many folks are getting laid off. So I would like to think that out there in LA, they just didn't have the experience for the right people to read that and say, hey, man, maybe you didn't mean that. Kevin himself has saved me from embarrassing myself in print. My editor, Steve Reese, has saved me from embarrassing myself in print. I am not sitting here talking to you today without great editors. So I think that they needed one more good one over there at the LA Times, and that's how that happened.
No, I think you're right. Not to turn this into a journalism seminar, but I mean, you're a very accomplished journalist. I'm a talk show host who used to be a newspaper columnist. But, I don't think I could have ever gotten anything into print without the copy desk, as much as I hated them, by the way, because they would change something just because that's who they are. It usually, if not always, was better.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, shout to all the journalists out there, including our television show hosts who are practicing journalism and all the people behind the scenes who make it happen. You know, it's fashionable to kick dirt on journalism and journalists and the media right now. But, you know, the country needs us to tell the truth, and we're here for it.
You got my attention, oh, I don't know, about 6:30 this morning. I was listening to NPR, and I heard a very accomplished journalist, you, make reference to something that I remember because I'm old enough to have been alive in March of 79 when the most anticipated basketball game of all time appeared on a Monday night, very similar to tonight. It was for the national championship. Take us back to a different time when the entire country was riveted, much like they'll be in a couple of hours.
Absolutely, Paul. So what you're talking about is Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird, Michigan State versus Indiana State, black versus right, versus white, flash and dash and behind the back passes versus Larry Bird was flashy, but he was perceived not to be. And so now you fast forward, and the connection there is there's so many similarities between Caitlin Clark and the matchup between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and the perceptions that we have of them and their audiences. And also at that time, basketball was sort of still sort of a niche in America. And that game, that matchup, that rivalry, which then transcended to the NBA, catapulted interest in the sport that really began us on the path to where we are right now today. And so I hope that this game tonight will turn a lot of other people onto the fact that women's basketball is it. It's a great sport. Right now, the women's college game, the women's college tournament, it's hotter than the men. I mean, let's keep it a buck. We're here talking about women playing basketball, even though there will probably be no dunks in the game. And that's fine. It's still exciting. It's still great. The things Caitlin Clark can do are out of this world. I admire them as a hooper myself and just as a fan. And so you go back to that game where Magic Johnson faced off against Larry Bird, and it set basketball period on a trajectory that hopefully this game tonight will do for the women's game.
And that rivalry continued for a few years after that too.
Yeah, sure did. All the way to the NBA, Lakers, Celtics, and you know, who knows what's gonna happen in the W with these women. But, you know, I'm just really looking forward to it. I can't remember a night of basketball. We haven't even talked about Juju Watkins versus Paige Beckers, you know, like, which is UConn and the crumbling dynasty. And you can put, I hope, thought bubble behind me and UConn crumbling. And Juju, who's the freshman, Juju might end up being just as good or better than Clayton Clark, you know. And so it's amazing. And we're not even talking about undefeated University of South Carolina Gamecocks and Dawn Staley on the other side of the bracket, you know? So it's just so much going on. I can't remember a night of basketball this anticipated since, decades.
Jesse Washington, we're so happy you could help us get ready for it. Be well. Always, always fantastic to hear you.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you, my brother in journalism, Paul. I'm making you one whether you want it or not. Thank you.
I'm honored. Thank you. Really appreciate that very much. Not sure it's deserved, but I'm honored. We'll take a short break. We have a long way to go, including the star of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Another Final Four story on this absolutely manic Monday.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Alden, oh, I forgot. We got spring football this week.
Yes.
How about Auburn, 2 p.m. Eastern time. The game will be at 1 o'clock local. And Alden is up next in Georgia. Hey, Alden. Alden, you there?
Hello.
Maybe not. Alden going once.
Going once.
Gone. Dominic is up next in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing, and how was your Easter?
Fantastic.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about them Vols. I was really pulling for them because if they would have won and won it all, I would have won two brackets and a bunch of cheddar.
Well, didn't happen.
Yeah, but what about them Bama boys, Paul? They played amazing, and I'll be excited to see what Sears has to say on the show later.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic, and I really thought the key to the game was containing Trevor Lawrence, don't you, in the pocket.
But the Tide Final Four game, man, that's going to be a tough one against them Huskies.
Yeah, how optimistic are you on that one? Only about 11.5-point spread right now.
Yeah, those Vegas guys, I think they're a little messed up in the brain because if Pringle plays defense like he did against P.J. Hall and he guards Klingon good and right sells back and we're hitting shots like we did all tournament, I think we could have a good shot of beating them.
Not counting Bama out, Dominic. I've learned that lesson.
Yeah. And with some Bama football, did you hear that Andrew Babalola, an offensive tackle, locked in a visit with the Tide?
Have not heard that yet. Boy, you've got good sources.
Oh, it's just, you know what On3 is?
Oh, sure. Very familiar with On3. It's a great service.
Yeah, I read it a lot, and that could really strengthen their lineup even more because he was originally going to Washington, but now that DeBoer is now at Bama, he's visiting with him.
Well, keep me posted on what you see on three.
All right. And as always, roll damn Tide, Paul. See you later, buddy.
Well, I was hoping for that, weren't you?
Yeah.
How about Rick in Houston? Hey, Rick.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. So, hey, Paul, in honor of the day, I have a quick, I think it behooves us to have a quick statement that everything that Jim from Tuscaloosa has ever told us is 100% true, every bit of it.
Really?
But I wanted to ask you about your opinion of the Washington Post article, Paul, because after I read it, I was just like, man, that's a whole lot of wahoo about nothing.
Yeah, Rick, I did read it, and I don't really like to say this about a journalist who put that much time in it, but I will because you asked me. I was bored.
It was horrible.
I mean, I've invested 30 minutes into all these things that I really just don't care about, and quite frankly, I knew most of it. Did I know... Uh-huh. Specifically that the coach had not talked to her father in 37 years? No, and you know what? I really didn't care.
Didn't care, you know. Personal,
did I know
personal
that she was an extremely difficult coach? Yeah, I knew that. I know her story very well. Did I knew she had a problem with Brittany Griner? Yes, I did. I've interviewed Kim before. And quite frankly, I think our last guest made a good point. If you like Kim Mulkey and you got through the article, you came away going, you know what? I think I like her more. I just thought it was much ado about nothing.
Yeah, it took him 2 years to write it. That's,
we can all collectively say how great it was, but I don't know. I just feel like maybe time could have been spent better doing something else.
I could have spent my 30 minutes reading it, doing something else.
And Rick, I'll take you back in time. Many years ago, I used to do stories like that. And the problem is you talk to so many people. You're no longer trying to write a great story. You're trying to write a long story. Like, I remember I did the longest story of my career, and my boss said, man, that was a long story. And I'm like, I can make it longer. I mean, you forget that most people... It's one thing to pick up an actual newspaper and read something like that. You can possibly get to the end of it. But if you're reading it online, which most of, not all of us were, there's no way to go through it the same way you would have otherwise. So it's a waste of time.
All the scrolling past the ads everything.
I mean, halfway through it, I'm like going, I need to check something else here. I'll come back to it.
Hey, Paul, quick question. We've had a lot of talk about athletic directors in the last few days. So where do you rank Scott Woodward in the athletic director hierarchy in the SEC?
I think Scott Woodward is in the upper echelon of athletic directors. He's made some daring decisions. I mean, he fired a coach that won a national championship 2 years earlier. A lot of programs would have ignored that, but he felt like he had to go, and he went outside the box. I mean, you know the backstory on Brian Kelly's hiring. The Mulkey hire goes without saying. He took the heat by some people, but he knew what he was doing. The baseball coach, that was a great hire. I think he's fantastic. I like Scott a great deal. We'll take a short break. We'll talk to Bill Conley. I haven't talked to Bill in a while.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.